My name is Ann Shields. I am working for the Institute for Life Coach Training. This is my first full year. I'm excited to be part of this faculty. And I have been doing career coaching off and on, mostly on, since 84. So I am old, but I've stayed current. I have run the career centers at numerous small private colleges and at Carnegie Mellon, and also done alumni career services at the University of Rochester. So my coaching has been primarily within the educational setting, but the clients that I've worked with have been anywhere from 16 or 17 years old up to retirement. I'm a relatively new life coach. I finished the AAC and BCC certification just this year. And so I am eager to talk to you about life coach training and job search coaching within that broader umbrella. I would like to ask if you would please throw some answers onto chat. Who is currently doing job coaching or career coaching? Who's attending this afternoon? Would you put it up in the chat, please? Okay, this is great. It looks like a couple of you are working perhaps also in an educational setting, college, university, academic advising. There may also be some people who are working for a social service agency, either a nonprofit or a governmental agency. And there are some people who may be within an HR function doing corporate work. And there's always a possibility that there are life coach generalists here. Okay, so we've got quite a mix here. Gary Cook, you've been working in career coaching for a U.S. agency long time. That's fantastic. So you have the technical, some of you will already have the technical skills down. You've probably used them a lot. Part of job search coaching can be, and it depends on who you might be working with, maybe some employment coaching or career counseling. There are some clients that you might work with who are brand new to the job search. For me, it was high school students and new college grads or college students, and they generally are unfamiliar with the job search process. And so my work with them leaned toward being more directive and more instructive, because they really didn't understand information interviewing. They didn't understand how to draft an email or how to tailor a cover letter or resume. As I'm moving into my own private practice and working with alumni and adults, from folks who were 3 years out to near retirement, I'm seeing a lot more opportunities to integrate life coaching in with the career coaching. Career coaching focuses on solutions, insight, and action. It's a positive approach that focuses on clients' capabilities, helping them practice the skills they need from the job area. It's active, focused, positive, and outcome-oriented. Now, as a career counselor in the early part of my career, I would say that I was all of those things. I looked at the whole person. We thought about skills, interests, and values. The young clients learned how to think about those things, prioritize them, and incorporate what they are learning about themselves into the career decision-making. Whether it was a major, if they're very young, or the first job or internship, or a career change, or now I'm working more with people who are looking to retirement and want a second career, an encore career, people who want to do something that's meaningful to them at this stage in their lives. So the coach approach is going to help our clients get out of their comfort zone. It may be helping clients recover some confidence to rediscover their priorities and what's meaningful in their lives. There may be some life coaching that borders in relationship coaching. If your client is in a relationship with a significant other, has kids, has a mortgage, the thought of you can do anything you want to do is great. And most of us have some limitations on what we might want to do. So there's a lot of room for us to be helpful to clients. What's really interesting these days, I think, is what is happening around us in the world of work. You all are aware as I am, of the tumult that's going on in the world. The world's been turned upside down, the entire world. What we're seeing in the press, Microsoft is only one of the many organizations that's been doing some surveying. Here's what we know we're moved, what we have moved into and was likely to stay. Flexible work. We know that leaders are out of touch with their employees. Burnout is extremely high. Gen X, interestingly enough, is at a greater risk. This is the group of folks who are most competent with the technology, but they started off in their jobs in the pandemic, many of them. They were onboarded online. They may have never physically met or spent time with any of their colleagues. They're struggling. They don't know how to connect. They're not sure they should be where they are through no fault of their own. It was just how things had to happen for onboarding people. Authenticity. What I'm hearing, and I'm sure you are as well, people want something different. They're tired of being overworked. They're tired of having work that's not meaningful to them. And with the opportunity to be in a hybrid environment, remote environment, companies can hire from anywhere. And what I have found interesting in one survey is an organization that actually is helping people relocate. People who work remotely relocate internationally. So not just, geez, I'd really love to live in Boulder. I guess I'll move there. But I'd like to move to Italy and set up my remote office there and be close to where I can look at my family history, or I've always wanted to work in Paris. So it's amazing what people are going to be able to do going forward. The world is upside down. The numbers are, to me, fairly frightening. I'm not sure about you, but here is an example of some of what the numbers look like. In the Microsoft study, 30,000 people, more than half of young adults are considering quitting their job. 54% of Gen Z, 41% of the entire global workforce. So this is not a US thing, it's a worldwide thing. So whether you're coaching from Singapore or Canada or England, Ireland, Wales, it doesn't matter. Every one of us is going to have the potential of working with clients who are struggling, who are thinking about a move, realize it's going to be a dramatic change for them, a big impact on themselves and those that they are close to, and they're going to be struggling to make decisions. We want them, as whole, competent people, to make good, informed decisions that they can be confident about, that they know are coming from their heart, their gut, their soul, however you want to think about it. The numbers that the employers are giving us are quite a bit lower. One employer survey suggested that only 8%, corporate survey suggested that only 8% of the world's, of the U.S. workforce would probably change jobs. I've seen in my work here anywhere from that 8% to up to 82%. So no one knows how topsy-turvy things are now or how they're going to be. As of 2 months ago, 28% of people were back in the offices. Employers are still being lenient, and some are being incredibly cautious, as you know, probably from your own community. They don't know what's coming up next. They don't know if this fall and winter will put them back into fully remote or not. But of those folks who are back, many of them don't really want to be there. And again, they may be pretty happy in other parts of their work life, but they want to stay remote. They're saving money. They're saving time. And they're getting time with their families. On the other hand, we also know that there are people who've been working remotely whose experience has been very different, incredibly stressful, juggling kids in school and their needs, to people working from a tiny apartment in New York City. It hasn't been easy for workers. And it's not looking like there's certainty going forward. So what does it mean for us? It means that there may be opportunities, many opportunities, for us to expand into this area of coaching if you aren't doing it already. For people who are working full-time and thinking about starting a practice, now's the time. I started my private practice a year ago, and I had people say, oh, what a horrible time to try to start a business. Not at all. I'm finding that this is an incredibly productive time to be starting this business. Even if people think about quitting, there are the questions about, is this going to make them happy? We know as coaches that happiness is more than a new setting. We know people who have hated their jobs, quit their jobs, or their marriages, found a new situation that they were thrilled about, excited about, and within a period of time are unhappy again. The setting has changed, but they brought their unhappy self to the new situation. There's room here for coaches to be able to help people understand, see, and make changes that make sense for them. I'm going to stop for a second. Does anyone have any questions? Just throw them in the chat. I'm not sure what you hope to get from today, and I want to make sure I answer all the questions that you have before I go to the next part of my presentation. Okay, no questions thus far, but shoot them to me as they come to you, please. I want this time to be the best it can be for you. So, as coaches, we're helping these clients, whether they're coming to us primarily for career coaching or from something else. If they have employment, career, meaning in life issues, we can help them. Think of some new strategies. Help them commit to making small changes to help them get to someplace that's better. Factually or tactically, we can help older workers understand what the new job search market is like, how to outsmart an ATS, how to get back a professional network that may have gone stale. how to move toward building a professional network for introverts in the group. It's tough. Not everybody likes to be out there networking. We know that. But there are ways for introverts to really leverage their strengths to their advantage in building a network. And we do have ageism. Somebody, Amanda just wrote, there's ageism and employment gaps that are big issues. Absolutely. I've been doing a lot of reading lately about women primarily, but not exclusively, wanting to return to the workplace after stopping out to parent. They're having a very tough time and always have. You can't have it all. We found that out a while ago. We made those of us who chose to stop out for a while knew that coming back might be tough, but didn't know how tough, didn't know how much we might change ourselves, that we wouldn't necessarily go back to our original professional self when we were ready to go back to the workplace. Priorities have changed, our skills have changed, and then for some of us, they're our work, the technology, the systems have changed. Those parents coming back are going to need help redefining who they are within a work setting, getting back in touch with their beliefs about what work is, about their life view, and how life view and their understanding of work come together within the context of their new lives as a parent. So it is fertile ground for coaching in general within the niche of career coaching or job search coaching. If that's not enough, we also have, as a result of everything that's been happening, loneliness, digital exhaustion, friction at home because of trying to figure out what the kids are going to need and do. Many parents have found that their children who never struggled before are struggling now because remote wasn't working for them. And here in my community in Rochester, New York, there's still some question about what school is going to look like when it opens in a few weeks. The unknowing causes stress and may stop people from starting the work of their own work of making their situation something that they will benefit from, will find meaning in. So what I would like to do is take a minute and show you what the course outline looks like. You hold on just one second. We're using a curriculum that was developed by a couple of former institute coaches. It is incredibly thorough. We match it with a more tactical approach to job search coaching, Yates's book on job search. I also have tapped back into the age-old classic Dick Bowles, What Colors Your Parachute. The two books take a very different approach to thinking about career discernment, networking, decision-making, and execution. The temperaments of the writers are completely different. The philosophies are different. The tactical aspects are fairly similar. Strategically, they're fairly similar. But in the classes that I've been teaching with this topic, there are some coaches who resonate with one, some coaches who resonate with the other. The class itself will go over techniques and strategies with a healthy dose of, here are some ways as a coach you can incorporate this information into your conversations with your clients. So we start off with behaviors of a coach. We look at IFC's core competencies, and we use Nancy Branton's coaching model. for our base for the class. And that is a version of a standard career decision-making model where there's self-reflection, self-assessment, exploration through networking, information interviewing, through putting together materials for a job search, perhaps doing more networking, but of a different kind, interviewing, and it goes through the various steps, branding, self-assessment, information interviews, self-branding and marketing. The content here is for people who are not previously deeply knowledgeable or skilled. People who have been doing career counseling and career coaching may find some of this content repetitive. What won't be repetitive, though, is putting it within the coaching context and the coaching perspective and doing the buddy coaching that is done each week between classes. We spent some time talking about networking, working with people who are less comfortable with technology. Spent a fair amount of time talking about the diversified job search with Indeed and LinkedIn and ZipRecruiter. It's very easy to fall back into the old way of looking for work, i.e. going through the classifieds. We know that more than 70% and some numbers I see are 80% or more of people find their jobs through their connections, through networking. And that's where 80% of their time and energy and thought needs to be going. So looking at job search strategy, there's opportunities for coaching people on how to leverage the different resources that are available online, how to build and leverage contacts that they already have and contacts that they might like to have. And all of us, I'm sure, have gone through a job search. So we know that at this point, some of the excitement of I'm going to find something new and I will be happier bumps headlong into stress, self-sabotage, mindset. And a coach has many, many opportunities at this stage to help our clients find in themselves their motivations, to help them sometimes be accountable when the motivation flags, procrastination steps in, when a sense of defeat or futility comes along. We're there for them. Job search management is helping client develop an actual plan or strategy for executing a search. We spend a fair amount of time on interviews, the different types of interviews, how interviewing can be viewed as intergenerational, how a young adult might think about an approach that a boomer interviewer might take, or vice versa. How to handle interviews that don't go well. Handling rejection. We move into compensation, talk a bit about negotiation, and decision-making. With decision-making, I look at, and the authors of this curriculum look at, Myers-Briggs type. It seems many of us know about Myers-Briggs, even if we're not certified in it. I use it heavily in my own practice. But it's a good framework for helping clients think about their decisions within fact and vision and their feelings and what's logical and rational in terms of lifestyle and salary. It's an awful lot in 12 weeks, quite frankly. We move through it pretty quickly. I'm going to ask again if there's any questions. The employment gap question, we will talk about when we talk about the branding and self-marketing, how to work with that with a resume. There, I've seen several articles recently from good sources, not fly-by-night fly-by-night blogs, but solid research showing that those gaps in the resume are getting the attention of employers in ways that they haven't before. There's an understanding coming, but not yet universally held, that those gaps aren't necessarily nefarious, that if I have a gap for 4 years, that I haven't necessarily been in prison or I've been hiding from the FBI. But there's still, a client still needs some help understanding how to best position themselves, how to leverage that opportunity. Okay. What do you want to know? Have I helped you understand what the class is and what some of the challenges are facing our potential clients and clients? I'm interested in hearing from somebody who's working in a corporate setting about how what I've presented is affecting them. I am happy if you'd like to raise your hand and talk a little bit about what you're experiencing and finding. I think it would be enrich the whole conversation if people would share. So please feel free to do that.
Hi, this is Allison Markinson. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Allison, hi.
I couldn't figure out how to raise my hand, so.
Oh, fair enough, because I can't figure it from here either.
Yeah.
I'm glad you just jumped in, Allison. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. This is perfect. So I'm working in a corporate setting as an HR business partner, and kind of I'll answer the question, but also would love to hear from others as I'm thinking about doing some coaching training that I can use in my current role, but also kind of thinking longer term. You know, I may work for, I don't know, 10 more years, but then would like to do something that's more flexible down the line. So that's a thought process as well. Loved everything that you said. What was kind of interesting to me, having this be the first session that I've attended from an informational standpoint, is that so much of what you said resonates with what I see in the workplace on a daily basis. So I kind of didn't expect that, actually. And I support an operations center where we've had people working in the office through COVID. So there has been a lot of management of, in some ways, I've had to play the role of an RN sometimes, making decisions about who can come in, who should stay out, who needs to test. Right or wrong, that's the role that I've been asked to play. So if there's anything I can answer specifically, I'm happy to do that. But I did just want to let you know how much this resonated. And it was kind of encouraging because I feel like there could be a lot of synergy with getting training in this area.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, Allison. The vast majority of us work. And based on what all of us read, not everybody is happy doing what they're doing. The doing work that's meaningful, that brings value to us and also allows us to support our loved ones and ourselves and our other priorities, isn't as common as we'd like it to be. I'm curious, Allison, if you could talk a little bit more about the people that you see, and obviously no details, but are your employees expressing the frustration, the stress, and hinting that moves are in their future?
Absolutely. And I have an employee population that's across the board from an hourly population that might be making $20 an hour to people making, you know, $200,000, $300,000. And salaried positions. And so the stressors are different, but they are there across the population. My current organization is not wanting to be as flexible in terms of hybrid and remote work. So, you know, your comment about, or comments about us being a little bit slow to change definitely resonate. But we've got, you know, childcare issue. I mean, all sorts of issues, multi-generational, you name it. I mean, and we are starting to see attrition, which makes me nervous as well, because we're gathering data, but I fear by the time we have enough data to maybe consider a change that we may have lost a lot of people.
You aren't alone in that. Your organization is not alone. It's been interesting as I've been preparing for this and just reading for my own benefit and knowledge, the reluctance of employers to make decisions from listening to their employees. In fact, there was a leader at JP Morgan Chase said that, you know, remote work doesn't work, that the opportunities are going to be for people, the opportunities to advance are going to be for people who want to hustle. And that want to hustle meant to be physically in the office, putting in the kinds of hours that had to be put in prior to COVID. And with banking, geez, that could be 10, 11, 12 hours a day, six and a half days a week. And yeah, there are probably some people who want to do that. And there are also people who want to move up in an organization, who are productive, who have made a difference, who add a tremendous amount of value, that don't want to commute 90 minutes each way back and forth to work. As Allison said, the childcare issues. Yeah, you might have to go back to work, but can you find childcare that will be reliable and stable? Tough decisions for people who are being asked to go back to work full time in the office, where maybe the inclination to vaccinate is higher than it is in some other places. I'm curious, for those of you who are working in educational settings, what kinds of things are you seeing and hearing from your students and from your young alums? I'm really curious to know what you've been talking about in your summer planning and retreats. How or are you going to shift how you do your coaching with your students?
I can share as a parent of someone still working on his master's. He's going back to school again because the jobs just, it's challenging to find really the right job when some companies are not really hiring into those entry-level positions. So He'll go back to school. He's actually in Europe, but he'll go back to school because at least it's being productive versus working flipping burgers. And so continue to do his learning until things kind of settle down and settle in.
Thanks, Amanda. I think that your son's story is really pretty interesting. There may be, for the young adults, folks who have graduated within the last 4 to 7 years or so, and I'm seeing it with my own son, geez, maybe I should go back to grad school. Maybe I should just go sit this out, get another degree, and wait for things to settle. That can be a great decision. Grad school is professional training, though. You go to grad school to prepare for whatever is going to come next. I'm talking with several young adults about that. What is the goal of stopping working and going back to school? They always thought they'd go back to college, but go back for a graduate degree. So this is another step in the life that they had laid out for themselves from a very young age. With some of the younger adults and young professionals, that's another piece of the coaching. They've been on a stepmaster or a treadmill, and they haven't been in a place, or they're just getting to the place where there is no obvious next step. The map quests of their lives don't work anymore. There's not a logical, consistent path from A to E. We know that. We've been in the world of work. We've seen our friends and loved ones have to move laterally to move up, change careers at different times. And although the young adults have seen that also, it hasn't been their experience, and that the idea of there are logical next steps is just so ingrained. And it's also probably ingrained in many of us who are still in the workplace, in part held on to because it is so darn scary to think about doing something next. Paige, would you be willing to talk a little bit about your note? Students are expecting that they'll have around 5 different careers. I think there's a rise in certificate programs. Oh, great point. Would you be willing to talk a little bit about this?
Sure. So I work at the university, and we are seeing a rise in certificate programs, which are, say, closer to 9 credit hours. That it's a post-baccalaureate certificate program, so that people who already have a BA can take a certificate in, I don't know, management, or we have some in worksite health promotion, for example, health coaching, because I'm in the School of Public Health. And we see them in gerontology or other ways that allow a person to gain some new knowledge, but in a way that's much less expensive and faster than a master's degree program. You know, a student can come in and say, well, I need to go back and get a master's degree. And what are we talking? $15,000, $20,000 or something, depending on where they go.
If you're lucky.
2 or 3 years. And then maybe that's really not where they want to land. And maybe things have shifted. So I'm hoping to see more of these types of shorter term certificate programs that allow someone to pivot. Because I think one of the things that, I don't do a lot of counseling for undergraduates, but one of the advisors that works within our school talks to the students about the fact that they will not just have 5 jobs over the course of their working career, but they're going to have 5 or 6 careers. There's going to be significant changes, not just moving from, you know, job A that's similar to job B kind of thing.
Paige, I don't know if you're seeing it, but I'm seeing and hearing from my younger clients and some of their employers that the rule that I grew up with is you stay someplace at least 2 years before you leave. It takes you a year to learn the job and then a second year to really be able to add value. That rule seems to be going out of the window for young adults. There's a, if things are not working well for me in 6 months and I don't get a lot of positive feedback and there's not a promotion coming my way, I'm going to make a jump. To me, that's freeing in a way for the moment, but isn't helpful for developing the resilience that we need it to adult to learn about office politics and how to maneuver with some savvy in a setting that just seems ridiculous and baloney. To you at the age of 22, you're smiling, Paige. Does it sound familiar?
I was thinking about my own daughter who's 24, and there is a lot of learning how to suffer. What I'm not even sure I want to use that expression, but suffer fools gladly. It can be a hard lesson to learn when you're younger.
Mm-hmm. We had to learn those lessons too.
But I we did.
But we were raised, I was raised at a very different time. And was the youngest of 5. And frankly, had to learn to take my lickings as the youngest. So I bulldozed through more things than some of the others might have. I'm intrigued by your comments about the certificate programs. There's a fellow, Jeff Salingo, I think his name is, who's doing a lot of writing. I think he's coming out with a second or third book very soon about higher ed as an industry. And can the four-year college and university really survive? There's been some pretty harsh articles recently, both in the Chronicle of Higher Education, as well as some of the top line business journals about graduate programs as possibly being a giant waste of time, of being a scam, of colleges and universities filling graduate programs, knowing full well that there aren't positions available for those folks when they come out. That's been a criticism of doctoral programs for a very long time. Jeff Salingo is firmly in the camp that certificate programs, that lifelong training in education really needs to happen, and it does not need to be degreed, and it doesn't need to be degreed for a lot more people than we are currently going this route. There are some coding programs that I found that will take high school kids and put them through a 9-week program or a 3 to 5 month program and teach them basic coding. And they already have relationships with employers set up so that their students, these high school students, are moving right into essentially co-ops with the employers who are co-sponsoring the certificate programs. It's amazing. So young folks who just never did well in the classroom, didn't aspire to the four-year degree or another 2 or another 5 or 7 years, are able to jump in for a somewhat minimal investment, considering tuition at a university or room and board at a university. His view is that this is the wave of the future, that employers want to hire right now, real time, the skills that they need right now. And working with university and faculty on curriculum development that anticipates their needs, it's not happening. It's not happening fast enough. Universities move notoriously slowly. So I'm finding it interesting, and I'm doing some reading on this myself, because as I look to my own career, as I move forward as a private practice coach, I need to know what's happening, not just in the world of job search as I knew it, but in the world of employer expectations for the next 3 years, 5 years, and 10 years. There's no shortage of things to learn. I thought I knew it all, having run career centers for 30 some years. A lot of the technical and strategic pieces of the job search coaching that I do is the same, but the context is just, it's changing fast. Whitewater is a term that lots of people use, and it's just like nothing but whitewater, really, as far as I can see ahead, and as far as pundits who actually know what they're talking about. I sort of know what I'm talking about, but I'm reading their stuff. It's going to be a wild ride. Mm-hmm. And I want to do the right things when I'm supporting my clients. And that means I need to just keep on top of this stuff. Right now, for me, as a relatively new life coach, I'm learning to incorporate the life coaching pieces in. And I'm loving it. And it's the response I'm getting is amazing. In the class that's coming up in September, it's 12 sessions. I think the cost is $625. Every week there's buddy coaching. In the first class I taught, we had a larger class and we had people break off in twos and threes to do coaching. with each other. The last class I taught was five people, and they decided rather than break up, they wanted to do their vote, that they would do a group of five every week. And if they couldn't, it was a long session, an hour and a half rather than an hour. And if they couldn't do two people coaching each other over the course of that time, their agreement was that they would pick up the rest of the coaching during their own time, not during the required buddy coaching time. I've just seen the evaluations from that course, and the folks that returned the evaluations were over the moon at being able to hear not just one other person's coaching style, but four other people's style, and get feedback from all of those different people as well. But really enriched that piece of the learning for those adult learners. Are there any other questions? I because I came on so late, I will not leave. I'll stay until everybody has questions answered, but I also really want to be respectful for your time. Sarah, Lee, Carla, anybody, Beverly, John, any questions, comments, concerns?
And this is Beverly. I just wanted to add to the conversation. I've been doing coaching through an outplacement agency for 8.5 years. And I also worked with a company during the recession in 2009. And part of the reason I was curious about your presentation today is because the changes are so great. And how I'm experiencing this is that I feel that the career direction piece has become even more important, especially for young people, than the job search process. Because the job search process with resumes, et cetera, the application tracking systems, artificial intelligence, even in the way people are interviewing and having to do them online, mm-hmm. doing them through Zoom, through panels, et cetera, all of that has changed so much. I can say that in the last year and a half, through the company I'm working with, we've done more humanitarian coaching than anything. We've experienced our people have multiple deaths in their family, multiple illnesses, adapting to their children being at home. I feel like I'm a frontline worker, and I think it's time to rethink this process. My people are experiencing ageism, perceived and real racism, tremendous amounts of grief. Some people are going through the first year of grieving with the loss of loved ones. There are so many issues in the workplace right now. 1 month, what did we have? 140,000 unemployment claims were filed, and they were women because mm-hmm. they were home with their children. We have multiple issues, and I think that the career direction piece is great for younger people, but for people who have to redefine their process now and to help them how to navigate these waters, because everything is different. And so I'm breaking it out where I'm doing a little less work through outplacement and putting more of a focus on developing my own private practice, because the need is there.
Being a frontline professional, boy, there's Allison referred to that as well. I mean, it's, and even for people who haven't had family members die, the fear that we have all lived with, the fear for our parents. I have friends with parents in nursing homes and assisted living who just were panic stricken every hour that something might happen to mom or dad, and they wouldn't have a chance to be there to say goodbye. Oh my goodness. No one has gotten through this without scars, some more than others, but we all have. Beverly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think you'll see in the private practice?
I think people needing to be more conscious of their strengths and what they're bringing into the workplace and how they want to present those so that they build their own value. But it has to start with them recognizing. I want you to know that I took Nancy Branton's class several years mm-hmm. ago through ILCT. Mm-hmm. And so I understand her pyramid and how she builds that process through mm-hmm. assessments and knowing yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think it has to start there. It's kind of a discovery process, and then to narrow it down to the path in the search. I saw somebody put a note in here that they found a great resource called Pathway U. I took that class with Brian Dick through Mentor Coach, and it was called Living the Calling. And it was a class about this is what we have right now, and people are more interested in finding meaningful, purposeful work, and here's a process that they can do that, and we can coach them through that. So I think it has to be more defined. It has to be technical, but it has to also be the coach approach, and to build a great deal of trust and to be very empathetic and compassionate that we have a lot of very wounded people that mm-hmm. we will be working with, and that we can help to bring them back into the flow of life.
I agree completely, Beverly. I think one of the wounds that might not be as visible is a loss of hope that things will be normal, whatever normal is. And normal is behind us. I have no idea what's coming up, but that they'll be happy, that there'll be stability, that their loved ones and themselves will be safe, that going to the movies doesn't feel like a potential death threat. I mean, we've all experienced it. We all have felt it. And I think going back to Nancy's model with the self-assessment, because our worlds have been turned upside down, I almost think of it as a kaleidoscope. You know, you look through it and you move the colors, you move the end and the colors change. And you think, how can those colors and that pattern be the same one from 2 seconds ago? Because it shifts so much. They're still the same people, but they're not. They still have the same skills, but it's a different time and place. Their values have shifted. I don't know anyone whose values have stayed the same. People, it's human to live in this situation and have to come out of it on the other side different. So that step that for me early in my career was, well, let's just jump online and do a skills assessment. You know, let me give you Bowles's book and work on this flower pattern, filling in the flower. It's not the same anymore. And it is. But who I thought I was and who I was 3 years ago, I may need to take some serious time and rediscover that and be kind to myself and relearn what it is that I'm going to need to make me feel stable and happy and that my life has meaning. I just finished a training with the guys who wrote Designing Your Life. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for a very long time. A couple of faculty members out of Stanford. Sounds similar to the course that was mentioned here and Beverly, that you talked about. Part of what they talked about with the coaching was helping people rediscover their curiosity, helping them rediscover the ability to dream and imagine. As adults, we often turn those things off. It's not practical. It's not really going to happen. Lots of things are changing now. And lots of employment opportunities are desperate for employees that maybe hadn't been possible before. And there are a lot of us who are moving towards retirement and are thinking about, and I've met a few, I've been a lawyer for 35 years and I've hated it for 30. What am I going to do now? Because I'm going to live probably another 30, maybe 40 years. What am I going to do next? That takes some soul searching, some digging. And it helps to have somebody along for the ride. And that's what we can do as coaches. And sometimes it's working with the walking wounded. And I think that's a lot of it. But if we can help those people who are suffering rediscover hope, to tap into the curiosity that they were born with and give themselves permission to dream a little bit, my goodness, what a gift we're giving them as coaches. Giving them, probably not so much, helping them rediscover that these things are possible again.
I also use the William Bridges book, often the Transitions book, and for people to see if they lost their jobs. First of all, many of them lost their jobs because of no fault of their own.
Right.
And their confidence and their self-esteem hugely impacted. And so once they can equate it to a grief process and to identify where they are in the grief process and the fact that it's very fluid, then it helps them to realize there's some days they don't feel like doing anything. And there are other days they feel really good about the situation, and then they don't feel so good about the situation. It's an emotional roller coaster. So I share that book with them. I also am a wellness coach, and so I focus a lot on self-care. And there's a book that just came out by Gallup about a survey they did and about the importance for the next 2 years of people to focus on self-care. In the workplace, people are going to need time to heal.
I don't know, Beverly, we need to get that productivity back up. We need to start making our shareholders happy again. I don't think we have time for this. Along with that, some of the reading, I've been doing a lot of reading lately. That's one of the nice things about being in private practice. Companies are looking at what wellness means for them, what their commitment to wellness means. Smoking cessation classes, bringing Weight Watchers into the organization, into the building, giving gym membership discounts. It's going to need to be more than that. It's going to have to be personal and intimate. As you said, healing needs to be done. And honestly, when I started on this journey for training to be a life coach, I really didn't think I would be thinking about helping people with grief and with loss. Losing a job, yeah, done that, been there. But this is losing hope, losing faith, losing family members. Whole different ballgame. And it sounds weird to say this, and I please understand that I'm not jumping up and down giddy because people are hurting. It's a good time to be working and moving into this kind of coaching. The need is great.